Well, we have it recording, so we are in business this evening. So good to be with you. I hope you brought your questions and any challenges you're having in building your business. Before we start, is there anyone that would like to share a comment or two about their experience to date with their power sessions?
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hello, this is Tanya. I just wanted to share something great that I'm noticing. As I'm starting my day and I'm asking God to put the right people across my path, people that I can serve, put them across my path so that I may serve them, I'm finding people coming across my path that are just amazing. You know, I don't believe in coincidences, but it's amazing what is showing up. And at night when I say, you know, soften the hearts of people so that I can serve them, again, amazing the people that are coming into my life for various different reasons. And it's not just business either. It's all different aspects of my life.
What is this sharing with you, Tanya? What are you learning?
Well, I'm learning that when I just open my heart without the expectation of you know, it's got to be this and it's got to be defined this way and it's got to fit in this perfect little box, when I just open my heart and allow things to come in, how it just opens the floodgates.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing. Is there any specific situation that you would like to share?
Well, I'm finding in some cases it's people that people in circumstances that I probably would not have come across. For one reason or another. Like, for example, in business, I'm coming across people who are right here in my area who are looking for exactly what I'm offering, that I probably wouldn't have met them had I not opened my mind to the possibilities. And all of a sudden, they're coming in all these strange, well, I call it strange, it's not really strange, but in these ways that I never would have expected, coming in, and they're, you know, they're looking for exactly what I have to offer. And I'm telling them, oh, you know, I think this will match up. And they're so excited. And, oh, I'm so glad you're here, and thank you so much for calling me. And it's just coming together so easily.
Is it fair to say that when we don't open our heart, but when we are focused on ourselves and our solutions, and as you said, having it turn out a certain way, that we actually make it harder than it needs to be?
Yes. I would agree.
Yeah. Let's, for the benefit, we have some new people on the call tonight, Tanya, so if you'll bear with me, I'd like to spend just a couple of minutes setting up the situation that you're going through so they can have an appreciation of the process. Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
Good. So stay with me.
Okay.
For those of you who are with us for the first time, we'd like to welcome you to the call this evening. We're so excited to have you. We have new people every single week, and as this process goes out to the country and it's expanding very quickly, we're finding that about 82% of the people currently taking the assessment are not people that were mailed out by us or referred by a client. It's someone has sent this program to. It's very exciting to see lives being changed. And Tanya, I might tell you that our focus has been very similar. It has been, what can we do to serve people, to solve their problems, to meet their needs, and what can we do to solve companies' problems and to serve their needs? And it's interesting when you're focused in this direction that you automatically have a partner, a power greater than yourself, and you can name it whatever you want. It's okay. It's been my experience working intimately with this power for a number of years that it's not offended. Its primary mission is to bring abundance and joy to the lives of people, and when you're willing to dedicate your life to that, and as Tanya said, starting the morning with, if there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I will serve them, when you're closing the day, a thought being soften hearts and prepare the way, and you know, I'll pick up that baton, I'll run with it the next day, and when we're in action, that power is our partner, and will put on our path people who need what we have. Assuming that we have great products, and I know the people on this phone and where you've come from, and you do. So that plus a heart, as you said, Tanya, so beautifully, you're opening your heart up to people. why would that power not want to connect them with you to bless their life because they're in that kind of a search? Congratulations. This is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Now, two things to clarify. And I've been pondering this. It's interesting, Tanya, how on target we've been in our minds today. We know that the greatest challenge faced by those who have home-based businesses, direct selling businesses, network marketing businesses, the single greatest challenge is this, and that's tied to a couple of issues. One, many of us have had jobs, and we lost our passion for what we were doing, or have still, because we still may have those jobs. The work may be boring and mundane and repetitious, may we feel less than valued, that our opinion doesn't really matter, that we're just cogs in a wheel, or we're there to fulfill tasks, we're objects, and unfortunately some employers don't get it, and they treat their people as if they were assets instead of human beings. And I mean assets as in a wrench or a motor. And so people are very discouraged, and they want to get away from that. They don't want that in their life anymore. And we have a tendency to equate work with boring, mundane, repetitious. So what we start to do is to think about a way in which we can make money without having to work like that, Interestingly enough, those who are successful, wildly successful, in a home-based business, a direct selling business, or a multi-level marketing business, they're not seeking a release from work. They are simply saying, I'll do whatever it takes to succeed. Their focus is success. Because, in fact, and we may have this person on the phone this morning, I deeply appreciate the comment that this person made this last weekend with us, as I was describing that those who are successful actually work harder in their home-based business than they ever did in their job. And I was explaining how that works, and passion-driven action and such excitement, and the comment was, gosh, that sounds too much like a job. And I thought, well, if it's done right, it's not boring and mundane and repetitious. It's exciting. It's passion-driven. And we can work without counting the cost. We are willing to suffer for it because we love what we're doing to bless people's lives. But don't ever get the impression that it's less work than a job. You may work harder than you've ever worked before in your home-based business. If you're doing it correctly, and the principles that I'm sharing with you, it will not seem nearly as burdensome as the job, even though you may spend more time. And the results can certainly be freeing financially and otherwise. You are in charge of your life. That doesn't mean you get to choose to do nothing. You get to choose when you do. And you can go to the baseball games and the soccer games and break away for a week if you want to without asking someone's permission. But this is not a profession where you get to choose not to do, because it may require actually more. So what happens is when we step from the job and we look at an opportunity, whatever it is, and again, those who are on this phone are with great companies with great opportunities and wonderful compensation programs and products, we look at that and go, there's my solution. Oh, look at the lifestyle. Look at this person on the stage and how they live and the homes they live in, the cars they drive, the vacations. I want that too. And so we dive in and we spend all kinds of money thinking that's going to buy us this lifestyle. When Tanya has just told us the secret, early in the morning we set up the day, prepared to serve people. We go into action throughout the day. We do all that we can do. At the end of the day, we ask that great power to soften hearts and prepare the way. We sleep like a baby, get up the next morning, and we do it again. And that's what creates it. The fantasy that we are, and intention to become successful, to avoid work, is the single greatest challenge that undermines a business in this home-based business arena. So just put aside, if you can, that I'm here so I don't have to work. I'm here because I get to be here. I choose to be here. I want to be here. I get to be in control of my life. I get to choose this. If I've got a great idea, I get to execute on it. I get to connect with people and change lives and make a difference every place I go, not only with my products, but with the financial freedom that I can introduce to a person. Freedom meaning that I have enough money that my bills are paid out of surplus, and I am working to create wealth. I'm no longer living in scarcity. I'm no longer living paycheck to paycheck. I am no longer living in fear and in anxiety. I am actually free, financially free, and working toward financial independence, which is a place I can get to where my assets, such as a passive income source or a real estate or whatever it might be, is generating enough revenue to pay my expenses. So I don't need it to do this anymore. Now I can do the work of contributing to the world. I'm no longer in a financial prison. I become free to create wealth, and then I become free to contribute to the world. What a beautiful thing. But this single greatest challenge. So what we've discussed in the last few weeks, for those of you who are new on the call, we have talked about the importance of connecting with people. It's called intrinsic validation, how to step into someone's world, take down their walls of resistance. And Lincoln is with us on the phone. I say this every week for the last 3 weeks. It's embarrassing. But we have all the programming done, and the first three programs are ready to go live. There's a little glitch in the back they're working on with the bookstore. And you'll be able to pick up quality number one, which is connecting with people, where we spend a great deal of time on this issue. So you know how to take down walls of resistance, how to become a partner with that power in serving people. That's one. Two, then we talked about how to use our mind constructively to be fully present in the now or fully present in our mind, avoiding that third place over there. I'm pointing to my left, and you can't with me. Just point over there. Just look over to your left and go, that place over there, where we catastrophize and fantasize and engage in counterfeit pleasure, and it's just awful sometimes in this space, and increasingly so. And Tanya, you may be discovering this as you're having these people come to you. We're having a difficult time in this nation. People are pretty tapped out and fearful and confused and looking for, and they're spending an inordinate amount of time in this space. And you can learn now how to stay present in your mind. If you're going to be thinking, do something that's constructive, mentally rehearsing, exploring, seeking inspiration, planning, goal setting, problem solving. Something that will ignite your passion, a vision that gets you so excited, you can't wait to come back and execute on it. So you're fully present in the now, connecting with people and completing tasks. And every time you're tempted to go over in that place over there on the left, you say, no, not today, not today. I'm not going there today. I am staying here in intentional creation. I'll tell you one thing, and here it is. When you are in creation, you're in congruence with the power that governs abundance. When you're focusing on bringing abundance to the lives of another person, you're in congruence with that power. And when that power becomes your partner, things speed up. They become easier. And it becomes attractive. You walk in, Tanya, into a meeting. You walk into a grocery store. There has got to be something about your aura, may I say, about your persona, about your energy that says, I love people. I'm here to serve. And you open your mouth and begin to speak, and people will be attracted to that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the law of attraction at its highest level. I don't believe we attract parking spaces. I've said that before. I don't think that power doles out parking spaces or lottery tickets. But it'll put people on your path who need what you have if you are in action and committed to bringing abundance to lives of those people. And Donya, you're bearing witness of that tonight to all of us. And thank you, because that's the truth.
Thank you. It's great having that tool available.
Oh, how fun. Mm-hmm. And you've got a wonderful team to build and a great company that you're with. It's going to be so fun to have you continue to grow in this and to introduce these things to your people so that they can skip this process of spending so much time over here in this void or this gap, as we're calling it, because that's where the majority of the population is spending the majority of their time. Now, let me make a comment about this. It's important. For every minute that we spend over there in this negative space, we ruin hours in a day. We know from our discussion during mental creation that the body physiologically reacts to that negativity. The sympathetic nervous system releases cortisol. The amygdala, the fight or flight center, releases fear dendrites. It blunts our capacity to think, to have common sense, to connect with people. It blocks our memory. It makes us feel anxious. We spend a few minutes over there and we have what Dan Goldman calls that amygdala hijack, and that could be with us for hours. Hours that we just wasted. If we can be conscious enough to say, again, no, not today, I am not going there, I'm staying in creation, and we stay here, imagine what can be accomplished by not wasting time over there and dealing with the fallout from having gone over there. And then you add to that, without being too redundant, that power that governs abundance as a partner, and you imagine how much more quickly or quicker you can actually build your business. Now, I want to talk about something very specific tonight. This will soon be quality number four. It's called discipline and structure. We've talked about quality one, connecting with people. Quality two, about goals, setting goals and achievable expectations. Quality number three, about completing tasks, staying present in the now, and the fact that when we choose success or failure, but we choose either one. But once we've made that choice, we don't get to choose what we do and don't do. That's not a choice anymore. Success requires that we do the hard thing. That's what's required. Now, if we know how to use our mind constructively, we can create or ignite passion that can help us do that hard thing. But we don't get to skip the hard thing. It's not an option. So I want to read a picture of a swimming pool tonight. And I want you to imagine that success is over on the other side of the swimming pool. And here we are on this side. And we're clinging to our fear and our frustration. And we stick our toe in the water. And the water is 60 degrees. And it's cold, and it's going to be miserable, and we're not going to be comfortable. Can you feel all of the resistance? However, success requires that we swim across the pool. Now, being a partner with the power that governs abundance, like getting to wear a wetsuit, so it's a little bit more pleasant. But here's the truth. The pain, the real pain, is not in the swimming. The real pain is not in the journey of being in the water and swimming to the other side. The real pain is surrendering to the fact that we must swim. It's the resistance. When we hear the word obedience, just be with that word. Think about that word. And related words like law and order and discipline and structure and policy and procedure and mandate and requirement and congruence and commitment. Can you hear all these words? What do these words conjure up for us? Any memories of being coerced or manipulated or restricted or confined or limited or controlled? Do we feel those kinds of feelings? If we have been in a job we have not enjoyed, or we've been in a relationship, one in which someone has tried to control us, it is logical to want to break free from that. But in breaking free from it, we can create, not only during it, but in the breaking free, we can create some thought processes that can create some really nasty problems for us, that cause a tremendous amount of resistance and rebellion, and we end up throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I did an interview once with a good friend, Chad Wade, who's he's been making about $1.4 million a year in the direct selling business. He wrote a book called Cracking the Producer's Code, and we've been coaching together. We coach every Wednesday morning and have for about the last 7 years or so. And I remember when he was first brought to my office by his upline, his mentor, who said, Chad's ready to coach. And Chad reached into his pocket and pulled out a roll of bills and counted out his coaching fee, one bill at a time. I found out later that this is 2001, right after the dot-com crash and 9/11. And the stocks had been hit pretty hard, and he had a stock that had been hit, lost 80% in value. But he sold that to be able to learn the principles how to become successful. He's in his T-shirt and these ratty jeans, standing in the office counting these things out. Now, from all outward appearances, you wondered, can this guy really pull this off? But the more I got to know him, the more I learned some great secrets. When he first came, he was pressing shirts in his dad's dry cleaner. His dad had taught him how to work very hard. And he became a hard worker in the business. And his mentor called me one day, Bob Snyder, and said, I want you to come to a meeting tonight to watch Chad. He's going to give his first testimonial. Well, he was there, and he was still in the same kind of T-shirt and ratty jeans, but he gave his testimonial, and he admitted later he almost peed his pants, literally. Very scared. A few weeks later, Bob called and said, you got to come and watch Chad. He's going to give part of the presentation tonight. So I came to watch him. 8 foot wide greaseboard, whiteboard. He gave the entire compensation plan for his company in the top right-hand 12 by 12 inch section. Top right hand side is really kind of funny. Little teeny writing, nobody could see it, but he did it. I have been with Chad when he just passed a kidney stone or was on the verge of, and he needed to provide an all-day training for his team, and he did it anyway. He has such passion for what he's doing that he did the hard things, and these are hard things. For him, getting up in front of the room was just unbelievable. And now he's a very successful keynote speaker, and an author, and an OGG-certified coach and trainer. And his six-figure income, seven-figure income isn't too bad either. But I remember in this interview I said to Chad, in all of these years, you think about the single greatest principle that you've learned. What is it? And he said, without any hesitation, he said, surrender. Surrender. Because we're sitting on this edge of the pool, and we can dig our heels in and rebel and fight and resist having to do the swimming. We can choose to spend valuable time. Just think how many people do this, trying to find new and easier and better ways to try to swim across this pool without having to touch the water. We can exhaust ourselves in this never-ending search. And frankly, while we do, the baseball bat of life just mercilessly renders bruises of failure and wounds of mediocrity. It just beats the tar out of us. Because life continues even though we're in resistance. So this real effort and action. It's in letting go and going into free fall, going into surrender. I got an email last week from a good friend, Cindy Ragsdale, who lives in California. And Cindy was celebrating her 50th birthday, and she wouldn't mind if I said that because she looks like she's 35. I want you to picture this. She's in an airplane that doesn't have a door. It's 5,000 feet above the ground. She's wearing a helmet and a parachute. You got the picture. And I'm sure her instructor told her not to worry about a thing. Except for, I imagined if I were there, I'd be thinking, yes, but people die doing this. And what did she do? She could have sat back down, stayed on the edge of that swimming pool, or jump. What are we doing? When you're standing on the threshold of your life tonight, here we are, August 18th, you're looking at the business, you're focusing on what it's like on the other side of the pool. You really like that, you want that, but you got the water between here and there, you got to do the swimming. How are you responding? Are you jumping in, or are you holding back? When you're faced with the tough things that are required to get there, are you willing to do whatever is necessary? Whatever. Are you willing to be present in the now and connect with people and bring abundance to their lives and complete tasks, even the unpleasant ones? Are you willing to go into your mind solely to get clarity and vision and ignite your passion? Are you willing to stay away from that horrible place over here, this void of fantasy and catastrophe? What are you doing? How much are you holding back? Your foot's still on the brake, still unwilling to let go. I want you to ponder just a couple of questions. When you're here, is there any fear about how long it's going to take or whether or not the program you're with is going to work? Is there any frustration around how much money and time and energy you might have wasted pursuing what we call the millionaire magic doctrine, the belief that somehow success is magically manifested by visual... is there any fear about what might be required to be a partner with the power that governs abundance? This next question is a tough one. If you've been trying to avoid or deny this power exists, have there been any inconsistencies that have developed in your life between your public, private, and secret life? I think what I heard Tanya say tonight, that when I opened my heart, my partner responded. The requirement is that you're focusing on bringing abundance to the lives of others. We are all imperfect beings. And we can spend our days shrouded in shame and fear or regret for past mistakes. Or we can do as Og instructed us in Scroll 5, and put it aside and remember it no more. Not waste one more day lamenting past mistakes, past failures, because all we're doing is wasting another day that we get to add to that list. Wouldn't it be nice if we could throw that away and stop having doubt about our worth and worthiness and ability and our whether we've got enough genius or magnificence, and just know that it isn't about any of that. It is about focusing on bringing abundance to the lives of other people. Is anybody on the phone like Josh Groban? I just love his voice. Such power in his voice. There was a song that was on one of his albums entitled Let Me Fall. And I thought, what does that mean, let me fall? So I listened to it, and I finally got on the internet and looked up the lyrics so that I could really focus, because if something was moving my soul, I wanted to share with you one of the verses. I won't sing it, so I won't lose all of you. But listen to these words, these lyrics. Let me fall. Let me climb. There's a moment when fear and dreams must collide. Here I am at the edge of the swimming pool. Fear to jump in, but a dream about being on the other side. These two are now colliding. Someone I am is waiting for my courage, the one I want, the one I will become, will catch me. Once we're determined to jump in and do the hard thing, to surrender, to be free from the tethers of resistance and rebellion, which are usually caused by the fear I mentioned, we can finally take the leap, trusting that the one I will become will catch me. You will be surprised at the person you meet on the other side of that water when you get done swimming. You're going to find that person was on this side of the swimming pool as well, but was tethered by all kinds of fear and anxiety and doubt. Free ourselves from this, so that we can go do the hard thing, because when we jump in, we can also add to this, the power that governs abundance will willingly stand by our side and be an active partner. This is a promise, so take your foot off the brake. Make the decision tonight, August 18th. This is your breakthrough night. You are going to jump into the water. You're going to stop pretending that you're swimming by walking around in a swimsuit with suntan lotion on, trying to look good. You're actually going to get in the water, get wet, and begin the swim to the other side. You'll find the swim is not nearly as complex as was the resistance to getting into the water into the first place. There is no easy button. There is no shortcut. Growth is not safe. In fact, it's uncomfortable. And I think some of you on the phone would agree that sometimes it's terrifying. However, I haven't had a coaching client yet who made the decision to finally surrender and jump in and swim, who didn't exclaim when they got to the other side, "Why did I wait so long? Why didn't I do that sooner? This wasn't anything like I thought it would be. Oh my goodness, what was I doing over there?" And then they become advocates to help encourage other people to finally break out of this fear. So let's make this commitment. Let's break out of this fear. I'm going to give you three things I want you to focus on this week. First, I want you to make a commitment every single day. This is part of that 90-day program. This, you'll recognize this, was to talk to five people. If you talk to five, talk to 10. If 10, talk to 15. Pick 5 to 10 people. New people you've never met before, and truly connect with them. You go to the store, connect with everyone you meet. Just come alive. Jump into the water of life, of loving people everywhere you go, and find out how it feels to climb in your car after being in the grocery store, having left sunshine in the lives of everyone that's still in there. Just feel what that's like. Two, many of us have tasks that we've been procrastinating. And some of those tasks, I call them the big uglies, these big ugly tasks. I want you to take the task and break it down into bite-sized pieces. If it's a tax return, for example, you've been putting off, break it down into two-hour bites. What could I do in 2 hours? I need to gather all my receipts. Okay, then that's one day. Do a power session on that day. Focus for 2 hours and get all that together and feel the sense of relief and accomplishment that comes when you do that. The next day, do the next piece. Again, relief and accomplishment. The next day, relief and accomplishment. It might take 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days to finish the whole task, but each day a task is completed. We have a tendency to put these big uglies off and want to be able to have enough time, which would take an entire day or two, that we can block out to do this. And I can promise you right now, if you block out 2 days to do this, there will be another emergency that will come right on top of those 2 days and mess it up for you. So break it into bite-sized pieces. And in a couple of weeks from now, you'll be able to jump on this call and say, Dave, I took on a big ugly, and it's done. It's off my desk. It feels so good. Such a sense of relief. So do that. That's jumping into the water. And lastly, I want you to think of something that you, and I use the word should, because that's how we sometimes look at these things, should be doing each day. A diet, exercise, study the scrolls, read a good book, make phone calls, 10 meetings, whatever it is for you. Something that's hard to repeat. And make the decision as something you want to do, get to do, and choose to do. Some of us are getting old enough that we do not want to continue living the way we've been living in terms of diet and exercise. Just before I got to this phone call tonight, I was meeting with my nutritionist. It feels really good once a week to meet, be held accountable, be on a very specific and wonderful diet that I'm not starving while I'm doing it, a very specific exercise program that she changes up each week so I'm not dealing with muscle memory issues. It's very fun to take this on. And by Christmas, I'm going to be a new man physically. It's so exciting. What is yours? Is yours similar to mine? Have you been fighting that diet and exercise one for a while? Or is it reading the scrolls? Have you had a hard time sticking to that schedule 3 times a day? Take control of their life this week. Jump into the water and stop the resistance, that holding back. Take your foot off the brake and go for it. Now, I want you to open up, if you have your assessment. Matter of fact, I'm going to have you make sure that next week you have your assessments with you. Because I want you to know the thought processes directly related to this particular area of rebelliousness or resistance. There are 6 of them. The first place you're going to want to look is in the external world. That's on the left-hand side. It's a 3rd measurement down. It's entitled Disciplined. Now, 97% of you have this one way under-focused. It's way down the line in your world. It just means that there's some resistance to structure, not the things you like to do, but the structure that is imposed on you. That could be a diet or exercise program. That could be a burdensome tax law that adversely impacts your bottom line or some mandated rules. Just check and say, wow, with this first characteristic of being disciplined, where I want to consciously surrender my resistant and often rebellious nature and willingly submit to rules, order, and structure that can add value to my life, am I, in fact, in resistance to those very rules and that very order and that very structure? Because one thing you'll want to absolutely know for sure is that obedience to laws that govern success are not restrictive. Obedience is not restrictive. Obedience is an end to freedom. Obedience is an invitation to freedom, the very freedom we seek. So that's the first measurement. The second one is teachable. This is the 7th measurement down. Do we respect authority and recognize the practical value in following rules and taking direction? If you've been in a controlling relationship, there's a very good chance this measurement might be under-focused, that it might be even a light green, perhaps an orange, and maybe even a red. If it's orange or red, I want you to reflect on what it's like when you're in a job, if you have one now or have had others, and you have a boss or a manager who insists on doing things their way, even though you know there's a better way. You do it that way because they're the boss. And how do you respond to that? what happens, and is there any chance that by, if you have this kind of a maverick approach to life, does it show up anywhere else? When leadership in your company says, do it this way, do you say, absolutely, time-tested, why would I try to reinvent the wheel? I will do it the way they succeeded, and without question, as they say, you know, make your first million my way, make your second million any way you want to. Some leaders get into that my way or the highway. Don't be upset by that, because that can cause you to rebel against their instruction, even though it may be in your best interest. Respect authority and recognize the practical value in following rules and taking direction. You wanted to have freedom. And so because of past relationships, you want to resist authority. Don't resist authority because of a past relationship. That authority may be, in fact, giving you the very direction necessary for you to have the freedom you desire. Now go to the third one. This is the ninth measurement down. It's entitled Analytical. And the question is, are you open to considering new ideas that have the potential for solving problems or improving situations? Almost to a person on this phone, this measurement is orange and red. Almost to a person. Now, you can find all of these, by the way, in your risk report as well. They're isolated. You go to your risk report in your back tools. You got a risk report. You go to order and structure, excuse me, structure and discipline. And that these six are all right there with all of these explanations. But analytical, it doesn't say you're not analytical. It doesn't say you don't think well when it's orange and red. It says you think a lot. A lot. You know, what do you do to shut this off? I shared a couple weeks ago and did that, asked that question in a speech, and a man in the back said, I drink. You know, I wouldn't exactly disclose that, perhaps, if that were my issue. But we do a lot of things to deal with this noise. And sometimes we engage this noise in fantasy and catastrophe, and we get attached to our ideas, and we need to be right, and we crush people. It's not because we're bad. It's just because our mind is so active, it gets so attached to its ideas, and it can't let them go. I've got a great section in this quality number four program about dualistic thinking to help you understand how this thought process functions so that you can better master it, because it can be just a bull in a china closet. The next one is the tenth one down. It's called methodical. Can you clearly see the risks in new ideas and appropriately challenge change that's not sound? Now, a number of you have perhaps a light green and maybe even an orange bar in this area. And it can be either one, really close to ideas that threaten yours, that's what your thought process wants you to be, or really open to ideas and you might make a mistake or two. So just step back and go, am I methodical? Am I careful and cautious when I'm thinking? Am I open to input? Will I challenge change that's not sound? Or am I just willing to jump into the next coolest thing? Or am I just resistant to anybody who's got a different idea? And what is this doing to my business? When somebody in my organization comes to me with an idea, do I summarily dismiss it? Oh, come on, get on board, my way or the highway, make your first million my way, make your second million any way you want to. Do we actually say those kinds of things or think them and communicate that kind of energy? Oh, that's so deadly. The next one is consistent. Do you manage interruptions? This is number 12 in the list. Do you manage interruptions and distractions in order to maintain schedules and keep your commitments? Many of us have thought processes that if we're sitting here looking at a task and we don't really want to do it, it's like we've got this metaphorical sign on our door that says, interruptions welcome. You know, please call me, please send me an email anything that I can justify being of value so that I can avoid this task. And if anybody's there, have a good smile tonight. And ask yourself, how many times do you let your thought processes talk you out of doing that which is most important, the next task in the process? We talked about that during the 90-day program. Is this task of value? Has everything been done in preparation for this task? And is this the next thing that needs to be accomplished, the next millimeter of creation? If it is, we don't let anything get in the way. Because even though it may be a hard thing to do, it is the next stroke in getting across that swimming pool. We may not like that particular stroke, but that is the next stroke. And we want so badly to be on the other side, we will do whatever it takes to get there. Now, I'm saying that's not destroying people or crushing people. When I say anything, that means doing the work, that kind of whatever that work is. And the last is being loyal. Do we protect the rules and policies and procedures needed to maintain appropriate levels of order and structure? Do you honor your company's policies and procedures? Or do you find ways to get around them? Or are you lenient with your people? Or are you too strict with your teams? There's a wonderful happy medium here in terms of helping people adhere to and protect the laws, the policies, the procedures. Companies have to have structure and policies and procedures. There's too much complexity in your comp plans, in your product lines, and in ways in which we can communicate those to keep people from getting in trouble, over-promising, under-delivering, all kinds of challenges. We want to make sure that we stick to the rules and we play the game fairly. It can be. And those who focus here actually excel. So I want you to imagine this superhuman with some of these rebellious and resistant thought processes all wrapped up in its personality. I want you to imagine it leaping up on the table and flexing its muscles and saying, I won't be controlled by anyone. And then sticking its finger in your chest and saying, not even by you. Because you've now met the enemy. You know the six measurements. How are you doing in these six areas? It's time to let it go. It is time to surrender and jump into this swimming pool. These thought processes can be obsessive. These thought processes are dualistic, right, wrong, life, death. Win, lose, all, nothing, perfect, non-existent. These thought processes will crush people. 95% of the population, write this down, cannot separate their idea from their self-worth. They're inextricably connected. When you point out flaws in people, it's personal, 95% of the time. It's as if you're pointing out flaws in them as a human being. And if you reverse that table, you have an idea why sometimes it hurts so badly when someone else points out something in us, a flaw in us. So let us not crush people. As these thought processes get into balance, as we surrender to structure and order, we let go of these tethers, these challenges. Because then we can create expectations, concrete conditions for happiness by thinking and thinking and thinking so obsessively. When that happens, we have all the physiological reactions we've talked about, and then we get involved in catastrophizing, and things can get really nasty. Now, I do have an exercise for you tonight in closing. This is a high-level exercise for intrinsically validating people. You can read about this in greater detail in the fourth quality, but I want to give you the overview of this exercise so you can begin practicing it this week. I want you to imagine a situation where you've got a really tough decision to make or a program to implement, and you're working with your team, and everybody's got strong opinions about how it ought to be done, and you believe you've got the right answer, and you just need to get everybody on board, have them all get ownership, and have them all just complete the tasks. And I smile as if they were robots, and they're not. What can you do to get consensus? Here's a technique for you. We call it finding good in other people's ideas. Now have some fun with this as I share this with you, because this is not easy to do, because we have a tendency to want to be right and to control, and when we do, we crush people. And we do not want to be crushing our teams. We want these teams to be vibrant. They want to be independent business owners too. So the first thing we do, and you always know that if you're pounding your fist, and the harder you're pounding it, the more likely your thought processes are out of balance and giving you really bad advice. It's a conscious moment to step back and separate yourself from these sabotaging thought processes. This is not an easy thing to do in the moment. You want to be conscious and be prepared to do this before you walk into the meeting or have the team discussion on the phone. So now we've stepped back. Number two, we see the people involved as living, breathing human beings. Got that? Versus someone just to execute a task. This is my team. No, they're human beings who have the same dream that you have. They're human beings. They eat, they breathe, they love, they worry. They have all the same kinds of emotions. They're human beings. And number three, this is the crux of it. I want you to look for the good in the person's idea, even if you have to dig a little. Someone's sharing their opinion. You're looking for the good in their idea. Now, I want to emphasize, you don't have to agree to find good. Think about that for a minute. You don't have to agree with their idea to find something good in their idea. Now, why would this be important? Remember, 95% of the population cannot separate their idea from their self-worth. Which means when you're finding good in a person's idea, it is the equivalent of finding good in them. When we find good in a person and acknowledge it, we are intrinsically validating them. And what happens when we intrinsically validate? Walls come down. Cooperation floods out. Now, here's a couple of secrets. I may have shared this story. If I have, bear with me. When we lived in California, we had avocado trees on our property. And if anybody has ever climbed under an avocado tree and tried to find a ripe avocado that they could pick, it's nearly impossible to see them. It's like they're camouflaged. But if you look and you look and you search and you search and you search and you finally you see one. And when you see one, you'll see 100 of them. If you can discipline yourself to be bigger than your need to be right, and you can truly listen to someone and find good in their idea, if you can actually find it, you're going to create a miracle. Now, know that the instant you find it, these thought processes are going to be screaming, don't say it. They'll think you agree with them and you won't get your way. Just expect it. Tell those thought processes to shut up, because you've got a bigger mission ahead of you than needing to be right about your idea. Because as soon as you see it, you're going to say the following. What I like best about your idea is, and you say it. You watch, especially if you're in a meeting where there could be tension or has been tension, you watch the tenor of that entire meeting shift. Wow. You know what I like best about that idea is this. Now, that's not the miracle. Oh, that's really exciting. And it really can change the energy in a room. The miracle is what happens inside your own heart. Because as soon as you see it and you verbalize it, you let go of this thought process that has to be right, you start to feel a sense of peace. Wow, that really is good. I'm so glad I saw that. Then you can see something else that's good, and even more that's good. And you start to wonder why you hated their idea so much. Well, the reason why you did was because these six thought processes think dualistically. All, nothing, win, lose, right, wrong, life, death. Once you start seeing the humanity in the person and you're there to lift and build them, instead of being right about your idea, once that's eliminated, you may find a lot of good in their idea, and that's miraculous. Because you do this a few times, and you become less and less needy in the fact of needing to be right. You can start to let it go and be increasingly open to hear people and their idea up front. That is a miracle. Because you'll start to feel a sense of peace. There is nothing quite like jumping into this swimming pool and letting go of that need to be right. Because you find out it didn't do anything but crush people. That's all it did. You might have gotten your way. You got to be right, but you didn't get to be rich. You got a team who's going okay, but their heart's not in it. You find good in their idea. And then you turn to somebody else, if it's a group setting, and you say, what did you like best about that idea? And they say it. Next, what did you like best about that idea? Oh, thank you. Then you turn to the next person. What do you think we should do? You know what I like best about that idea is this. And you turn to the others. What did you think? What did you like best? So you write down these best ideas, and when you're done, collectively as a group, everybody having ownership in good ideas, good in their ideas, now you get to choose what would be best to solve this problem. And when you're done, you have a team with ownership, ready to move forward. It might not be 100% of what you wanted to do. It might only be 80%. But you'll have 100% effort on everyone's part. And you may discover that although it's only 80% of what you wanted to do, it might be 100% better than your idea. This is a wonderful exercise. We've had people do this in corporate meetings, in team meetings, in one-on-ones with their people, and just acknowledge the good in someone's idea takes down barriers and builds bridges to other human beings. We are dealing with human beings, not with tasks, not with rules, but with human beings. When we see people that way, and our mission is to lift and build them, to help bring abundance into their lives, we have a partner who will put people on our path, as Tanya so eloquently described at the beginning of this call. So let us make this August 18th, the night you surrender. You surrender. You let go of your resistance, and you jump into the swimming pool. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. It's 8 o'clock, honoring your time. If there's anyone with a question, I'd be willing to stick around for a few more minutes. Otherwise, thank you all for being here this evening. Let's continue our 90-day challenge to create something magnificent in our lives. Keep doing your power sessions every day. These are the hard things. These are the things we do with passion that shift our lives. We want what's on the other side of the swimming pool. Let us surrender, jump in, and do those hard things. Are there any questions that you would like me to address this evening before we wrap this up? Okay. Very fine. Everybody have a wonderful evening and a very successful week. Surrender. Jump in that pool. Let's do the hard thing. Drop us an email when you jump in. Let us know you've made. Good night.